Welcome to The Fast Track, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Hello and welcome to The Fast Track. I'm your host, Scott Benjamin, and I'm joined by my producer once again, Kurt Guerin. Kurt, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Scott. How are you?
I'm also doing well, and you know, I'm super excited about this show this week because we've got a topic that's got a lot of meat to it and something that I think that is going to be just ripe for conversation between the two of us because we both have an interest in this sort of thing anyway. You know, a little bit of track driving, a little bit of a little thrill seeking, I guess, maybe. We're both kind of not adrenaline junkies, but we both like to kind of test the limits of our vehicles, kind of, you know, just get out there and have a little bit of fun in them. And I think this is something that a lot of people can relate to. Maybe not a lot of people have done this in the past, of course. I think we're going to find very few of our listeners have actually done this, but there are a couple of examples that I'll tell you about in just a moment. So let's just jump right into it, and I'll tell our listeners what we're going to be talking about today. And it was kind of a question that I had. And it's something that I know I've voiced on my other show on Car Stuff in the past. And I think I've maybe answered it a little bit, and we've even discussed this track. And I'll get to all of this so you understand in just a moment. But my question is about the Nürburgring. And the Nürburgring has in the past, I don't know, decade or maybe even 12, 15 years, seemed to be the place that manufacturers have taken their automobiles to test the limits, to see how fast they can lap the Nürburgring. And there's a specific part of the Nürburgring that they do this in. It's a certain loop that they test it on that we'll talk about. What it is it's kind of like a level playing field for all manufacturers to be able to go and say, we can run this track at this speed in this amount of time in this car, and that's why our car is the best. And if you think you can top it, go do it.
Yeah. And it offers a bunch of different types of conditions as well through the surface of the course and the terrain and weather and all sorts of other obstacles that make it interesting and kind of like something to brag about.
Oh, absolutely. We'll talk about all of this because there's some really, believe it or not, even the weather is a fascinating topic on this track.
Yeah.
And so is the surface material because it changes over distance rather. And maybe one of the coolest things about this is that you can go and drive on this track if you just have a few dollars in your pocket. It doesn't really cost that much money. It's officially a toll road. And I know I'm probably not giving anything away by saying that right now. And man, there's some fascinating things that go along with this whole thing. Now here's a little bit of background, and I want to temper this with this thought. Okay, there's a Car Stuff episode on the Nürburgring, and we went through a lot of history. We went through the details of how they've modified the track, and you know, like the, you know, the different curves and all that stuff, and the barriers, and just a lot of information about the track itself. So there's a ton of history. There's a ton of material there about Grand Prix, about Grand Prix racing, and about the switch over to Formula One and all of that. It's all there. So I don't want to double up on too much of that, and I know that's tough not to step on that. So we're going to have a little bit of overlap, but not a whole lot. Now there's a few things that I do feel like we need to repeat. This is just because there's some really interesting things about this track that I think are important. And number one, probably the most important thing that we need to know about this track is that it's insanely dangerous. Insanely dangerous. I mean, it really is. And it was designed a long, long time ago. I think the track was built in, 1925? And it's a huge, huge track. In its current form, I think that the overall lap, if you, the Nordschleife, or Nordschleife that we're going to talk about, which is the North Loop, is about 14, it's over 14 miles, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And over 150 turns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's another important point. This is a course that goes through the mountains.
Yeah. I'd like to see what the elevation change is the course of a lap.
I think that I read somewhere that the elevation change is over 1,000 feet between the start and finish of the track. So, really an interesting track. It's fascinating. What do you say? 150 some turns.
Yeah.
They had more. They tried to make it safer, and that's partly due to Jackie Stewart. In fact, it's mostly due to Jackie Stewart and a lot of other F1 drivers that got together and said they're actually going to boycott this race if they didn't make some changes. And this wasn't always the case because early on, you know, Formula One it was a little bit different. It was fast, sure, but it wasn't quite as fast and it wasn't quite as dangerous as it was in the late 1960s.
And that's when they started adding some wings to the cars and add a little more downforce, so, you know, where the car stuck to the track.
Exactly.
Right. So when they would go over some of the more, pronounced elevation, quick elevation changes, maybe the car would get lighter than it should have been. Or something.
Yeah,
I was just trying to figure out why the drivers were so afraid of this particular track, and that's all I could come up with.
Well, see, the course got it wasn't that the course changed, of course. You know, that was the same as it always was.
The cars got faster. Exactly.
Yeah, the cars got faster, and the cars changed.
Probably more dependent on air flowing around it in a certain way.
Absolutely.
Cars aren't supposed to get too far off the track.
Correct.
Off the surface.
Yeah, exactly right. Cars are designed to be on the track surface, and we've talked about this with, you know, the Thrust SSC and, you know, all the other cars that are going fast.
Yeah.
And essentially every car that we've talked about so far on the fast track.
Mm-hmm.
But cars are designed to stay low, to stay kind of stuck to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The faster you go, the more downforce they have to have in order to stay on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that there's some dramatic elevation changes, whether it's just a little rise or, you know, it's like you're coming over a crest and you can't see what's going on the other side of it, and it drops right off. At this point, the cars were going so fast that they were becoming airborne. And part of the problem was that with the way that the downforce was designed, I guess, on these cars,
mm-hmm.
it was meant to act like a reverse wing to push the car down. So when you get air underneath the car, it acts in the opposite way. It acts like it's going to want to lift off. And we've seen that in recent years, of course, with Le Mans and, you know, other tracks as well. It's not just the Nürburgring, but tracks where cars become airborne, these road courses, are really, really dangerous for drivers that are going super, super fast. And back then, you know, back in the late 1960s, Jackie Stewart was saying that at the time, and I think I've mentioned this in other podcasts even, you know, the F1 podcast, is that, you know, a lot of his friends were dying on these Grand Prix circuits, and the Nürburgring was especially dangerous. In fact, one of the facts that came out of the last Karstoff episode, and I think it was something that Ben had mentioned, is that this is hard to believe, and I don't know where he dug this up, but I do remember him saying this, that F1 drivers had a 2/3 chance over 5 years of competition that they would be killed in competition in 5 years. Mm-hmm. 2/3 chance. That's 66% chance that you would die in a race if you raced for 5 years or longer in F1 competition at the time. And this is like, you know, during the late 1960s, early 1970s. So Jackie Stewart had a very valid point. You know, he said, you know, I'm losing friends every weekend on these tracks. Safety's got to improve in some way. Let's start with cars, of course, but let's move on to, you know, safety equipment and tracks and everything. So he wanted improvements everywhere. The Nürburgring, they responded. They changed a lot of the track. You know, they slowed down some of the corners, and, you know, it made it a little bit safer in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of ways they can design corners to make them a little bit better. But overall, still, the Nürburgring is just an inherently dangerous course for a lot of reasons. And I think you are already know a couple of reasons why.
Yeah, I think I know what you're trying to get at. I mean, the fact that the track is kind of laid right on top of these extremely rolling hills,
mm-hmm.
in the middle of a forest, it's a lot narrower than a lot of modern day racetracks are designed to be. The surface is different, the weather conditions are different, and then just the general speed at which you're going. The course was designed at a time when cars didn't see speeds like they see now.
Sure, they were fast, but they weren't quite as fast as they were in the 60s and 70s, and then even now. I mean, they're incredibly fast. You know, I think I want to mention this right now, if that's all right. I want to take just a second to say that I think the last German Grand Prix that was run at the Nürburgring, and that's very specific. We'll talk about that in a second. But the last one that was run at the Nürburgring was in 2013. And, you know, of course, there were other German Grand Prix. I mean, the latest one was in 2018, I believe, right? Or was there one in 2019? There might have been one in 2019.
Yeah, they just had the German Grand Prix.
Oh, they just had it. Okay, yeah. All right. But yeah, they kind of like skip around. So it's not always run at Hockenheimring or at, you know, the Nürburgring.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a mix of the two. Or sometimes it's just not even at either one of those, you know, depending on whether they're going to run something else. You know, you mentioned one thing here, another thing that I need to mention real quick, the weather. The weather is a huge factor in this. Now, this course is so large that there's a town in the middle of the track. I mean, there are people that live there, there are residents that live there throughout the year. there's a castle in the middle of the track. That's how big this is. And all of the, you know, the surrounding property. I mean, and the castle goes back to like the 1100s or something like that. It goes back a long, long way. I mean, it's an old, old castle, of course. If you ever look at any bit of footage that is maybe shot where, you know, there's an airplane flyover, the track itself is a beautiful track. I mean, you would just kind of, your mouth would water wanting to get onto this track and drive it, because it's such an interesting looking track. It looks beautiful, really, it does. And that's why Jackie Stewart decided he was going to call it the Green Hell, because he feared it, but it was also beautiful, and it was green, and, you know, the trees are right nearby. There's a great sensation of speed and everything, but the weather is something that you really have to factor into this thing, because it could be pouring rain on one part of the course, and the other part can be completely dry and sunny. And we've seen Sir Jackie Stewart talk about this, and one scene is one where he was in a Rolls Royce. And he's still in his garb, right?
He still has his fire suit on and a little hat.
Yeah. I think they picked him up in the pits and said, "Hey, Jackie, let's go out and talk about the course a little bit here. We happen to have this Rolls Royce for you, you know, as a convertible, very nice car,
he said,
right?
Perfect.
Yeah, that's right. No problem. Yeah. Maybe it was even his. Who knows? Yeah, he's driving the track and he's discussing what some of the surface changes are like and what some of the weather changes are like.
From what I gather, from what Stewart said, was that the different types of pavement hold water different. Besides the fact that one lap it may not be raining, and then the next time you come through a certain section it had rained or is currently raining, the way water drains off of the track is different as well. So some spots it'll dry out quicker and some spots it'll dry out slower, and then water running across the track in a certain way creates little streams.
So if you can
imagine flying over a hill and then setting up for a turn right after you jump over this little rise, and then it being wet on the other side, you know, you can imagine how tricky and I guess just generally sketchy this particular track can get when you're racing on it.
Yeah, and it wasn't wet the previous lap. So, things change on this course over the course of one lap. It's fascinating to me that, you know, there is a weather factor as well in this. And it almost reminds me a little bit of, like Pike's Peak or something like mm-hmm. that, where you might encounter a day with sunshine and warm weather at the bottom. Mm-hmm. You get to the top and there's a blizzard practically going on. It's similar to that. Or, yeah.
Well, that's why it may be the ultimate test track in a way. A lot of conditions are different. Road surfaces are different. There's concrete slabs. There's bank turns, uphill, downhill, suspension gets light, gets heavy. Like you mentioned, it's just it's a place where everybody could go and kind of see what they have.
You know what? I love the idea that, you know, everybody's kind of got their own opinion about what this course is all about, like the drivers do. A lot of them are, I think a lot of them are afraid of it, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Or at least there's a level of respect about the course.
Well, you know, I honestly, I guess maybe the respect is a better way to say it. I mean, to say they're afraid of it, I mean, they do it anyway because they've got nerves of steel, right? Yeah. I think I would be afraid of it, really, if I had to go out and do that. Of course, the first time, I assume that rookies are afraid of it, probably.
Yeah.
I'm sure that they are. But Jackie Stewart, he said in one of those laps, you know, he does have great respect for the course. He does, and I think he has a little bit of fear of it because it is a kind of scary thing to drive. You never know if you're going to make it back. He said he always, every time he left to go to the German Grand Prix at the Nürburgring, he would stop at the end of his driveway, look back at his house, kind of like one long moment, and then leave. And he said, because I never knew if I was ever going to come home from that race, because that's how dangerous it was. And he said, while he was driving this thing, he said, you know, I drive this at speed. You know, I'm going 175 miles an hour on this course at the time. This is back in the late 60s, 175 miles an hour. He said, you know, if I really were ever to walk this course, if I were to ever just like really take in that, you know, there's no guardrail here. And over here, there's, you know, just pine trees. And, you know, over in this area here, like if I go off, I'm going into a stream, you know, that kind of thing. He said, if I ever really just took all that in, I probably would never drive here ever again. I'd never race this course. And I think he's got a point. He said the less he knows about the course, the better, in that he just knows I got to go fast and turn left right there, right there, and aim for that tree so that I can hit the carousel in the right spot. And it's just, he knew the course really well. But he said the less he knew about the surrounding part of the course, you know, the dangerous part, like if you were to go off course, mm-hmm. the better off he was. Yeah, so he did have a healthy respect for it. And, you know, I think There's more to it. You know, we listened to some audio from Boris Sed, who is also, he's a legendary road racing driver as well. You can look up this interview if you want on YouTube. You can find the entire Boris Sed discussion. God, the title is long. It's
Steve Letarte's podcast.
Yes,
he was a crew chief in NASCAR for several drivers.
So. It's Steve Letarte on Location, and that's his podcast. Although this one has video as well, but it was from Watkins Glen, and there he's discussing, you know, the dramatic elevation changes, and if you skip forward to about the 10-minute mark, that's about where the discussion about the Nürburgring starts, and he's talking about he races in something that's the 24 hours at Nürburgring. So imagine how grueling that would be on you know, a series of drivers. It's not just one driver, obviously. But he said something just remarkable here. He said that at the start of that race, 230 cars start that race. 230. Imagine starting the race with 230 cars on the track. And we're talking about a track like what we've been discussing, a long, long track, you know, with 156 turns.
Yeah.
Elevation changes. It's, you know, going to get dark at some point during this race.
Yeah.
There's weather changes. There's very little runoff. There's, almost no guardrails of mention, really. I mean, there are some. But you're in extremely fast cars. And he said, if you're in a fast car, he's in one of the top-end vehicles, he was passing on average 50 cars per lap.
Yeah.
50.
I think he said something like the faster cars will lap the slower cars every 3 laps.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's a sports car race. There's all different kinds of categories.
You know, that can make it dangerous, too, because you've got slower cars and faster cars on the same track. You know what's interesting? And I know we're going way over here. We have to stop in a moment. But what's really interesting, he said, and here's our answer here. He says it's about a 9-minute lap for him in the sports car series. So you know that Formula One cars are doing it a lot faster than that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess a 7-minute lap, something like that, ballpark.
During the Touristenfahrten, which is the daily driver events they have at the track.
Yeah.
I think they said like a 10-minute lap is something to brag about. So we'll get there.
We'll talk about that soon, but I think first maybe we should take a break. Back, and you're listening to the Fast Track with your host Scott Benjamin and Kurt Guerin. Kurt, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Still doing well over there. Great. Okay.
Still
good.
Hanging in there.
I love this topic. This is an interesting one because the Trek has so much history, so much going on for it. We're going to talk about the manufacturers and what they're doing at the Nürburgring. Because it's not just, you know, races that happen there. It's manufacturers that are going there and using it as a test facility. And they're using it as kind of a level ground test facility so that, you know, when one manufacturer says our car can lap the Nürburgring in this amount of time, the other manufacturer has a way to compare exactly to that time with their own version of whatever car that they want to bring. Whether that's an all-electric car, whether that's a hybrid car, internal combustion car, whatever type of car they want to bring, a sports car, sedan, any of those things, they can claim that they have the fastest vehicle based on the timing that is consistent at that track. Now, we talked about all the other things that are inconsistent. Of course, drivers are not going to be consistent. You're not going to have the same driver in different manufacturers' cars. Are going to bring their own driver, you know, whether it's a pro or somebody that, you know, they have in their own test track or whatever. There's going to be the weather. There's going to be atmospheric conditions that day. High pressure, low pressure, wind, you know, whatever. They're going to have to deal with all that. But the thing is that, you know, you're on the same track. You've got the same distance. You've got the same timing facility that, you know, says, like, this is an accurate time. Everybody gets the same treatment. There's no difference in this. It's the exact same distance every time. And no difference at all. No variance. You don't have to do, like, a one run one way and one run the other way like you do for a land speed record. It's just a lap time. And that lap time is something that these manufacturers have really promoted over the last decade or so, or maybe even more. It might be more like 15 years. I haven't really been paying attention, I guess, for that long to figure out when they started. But it seems like for the last decade or so, the Nürburgring lap time is a huge deal for sports car manufacturers. So they bring a lot of different cars. They bring there's a huge variance. And let me tell you just a couple of times here, and we'll just kind of get the ball rolling here maybe, and we can talk about, some of these in a little bit more detail, maybe in just a moment, if that's all right. All right. So number 10 on the list is the Lexus LFA Nürburgring package. Oh, so a special package just for the Nürburgring, yeah. Right? All right. Interesting, right? The time, the lap time is 7 minutes, 14 seconds. All right. Just and a couple, you know, hundredths of a second as well. I'm not even going to read those. So 7:14. All right. Almost 7:15. If you move up, you know, you get to like the Corvette C7. Then there's this is a surprising one. The Gumpert Apollo comes in at from 2009. This is a car from a long time ago. The Gumpert Apollo is still number 8 on the list at 7 minutes and just under 7 minutes and 12 seconds. So still really, really fast for that car. You go up a little bit higher. You got a Mercedes, a Nissan. There's a GTR, of course. There's the Dodge Viper ACR, which comes in at 701.03. So just under, just shy of breaking that 7 minute mark. They didn't quite do it with the Dodge Viper ACR. Then there's a Porsche, which is the 918 Spyder. Then we have the first Lamborghini. Oh, that's a clue. I just gave away, right? The first Lamborghini comes in at number 3. That's the Hurricane. I hope that's the way you pronounce it. Hurricane. Which comes in at 6:52. So they actually broke the 7 minute mark. Then there's a Porsche GT2 RS. And then the number one car on this list is a Lamborghini Aventador SVJ, which comes in, and get this, this is a fast time, 6 minutes, 44 seconds, 0.97. So just under 6 minutes, 45 seconds. And that's really, really moving, right?
Yeah, but that's smoking.
But I want to point out one thing here. These cars from 1 to 10, they're all sports cars, of course. They all come in within 30 seconds of each other.
Yeah.
And that's how tight this race is, right?
Yeah. And we talked about all the differences in the track and things that can happen, weather conditions and whatnot. And it's just funny that they use this as a standard and they quibble over 30-second difference, and, you know, the drivers are all, of course, they're different.
Manufacturers spend a lot of money to go and do this, right? And they want to be number one. They want to at least be in the top 10. And I completely get that. It's kind of important to keep your sports car in the top 10 on the fastest cars of Nürburgring right now, because that's kind of the standard, right?
Well, where is Ferrari on this list?
Exactly.
They stay out of Germany, I guess. They say, come to Italy, where racing...
Yeah, they're running
This is the...
Good point. They're running on Italian tracks,
yeah, like
I guess, right?
Monza or something.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they are. I don't know. Maybe there's a Monza record that I don't know about or whatever. But the Nürburgring is fantastic for this, and it is a level playing field. But you make a very good point, Kurt, and we talked about this off-air when we were getting ready for this podcast, in that I like... for a short amount of time, reading the forums, you know, that go along with these numbers. You know, like when we look up the Nürburgring fastest times or any article that has to do with, like, you know, someone breaking a record, I like to read the comments just for a short time, because quickly people get out of control. They start to have a flame war about all kinds of different things that really have very, very little impact on the ultimate time of these cars, I believe. I think so anyways. I mean, maybe there's more to it than I know, but you and I both kind of had a good laugh about that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's minor things that people think make a huge difference.
And things like tires and if the car has a racing package built into it, roll bars and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Traction control,
you know,
the driver assist options that may not be conducive to running a fast lap or may actually help the car run faster.
All right, there's like three things there that I want to mention. Okay, so you said traction control and driver assist type functions. You know, I don't know where they stand on if those are turned off, turned on, or, you know, whatever. I'm not sure how that all works out with the
manufacturers. I would imagine real race drivers want very little of that.
I would think so.
But even F1 has a little bit of...
They do, yeah. That's the crazy part. Okay, so also roll bars. Okay, so certain cars are built from the manufacturer with a roll bar that's a part of the structure of the vehicle itself. So that's something that has to be a factor, because it does stiffen the chassis, does make a difference in the handling of the vehicle. The other thing, and this is one that a lot of people on these forums will get just irate about, tires. Tires is a big one. You mentioned tires as one of the first things.
Yeah.
And they seem to go crazy over this versus like factory tires versus aftermarket tires, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the main argument here is that, this is if I'm getting this right, and you tell me, Kurt, if you get the same impression or not, or if you have a different opinion about this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But what I am understanding is that people are upset that they're not using the factory-provided tires on the cars to do these runs. But they are putting tires on the cars that cost, let's say, I'm going to just ballpark this and it's general. Let's say that the tires are $1,000 each or $2,000 each or, you know, maybe even more. It's super expensive tires. I mean, they're really, really pricey, great tires. Yeah. Sticky compound, you know, all that. However, they are available on the market. You can buy, like you and I could buy them if we had the money, if we wanted to. We could buy that same tire from a manufacturer. What a lot of people are confusing, I think, is the fact that they're not using a proprietary race compound that is for a certain team or a certain series or something like that that you cannot buy commercially on the market. You can't go out and find a website where you could buy that tire. You have to be part of that team in order to get that compound, that racing compound.
Yeah.
And I think that's the confusion because it seems totally fair to me that if you want to put a pair of tires on or a set of tires or even brake pads or whatever on the car that you can buy somewhere. You know, aftermarket or wherever from the manufacturer, you know, whatever it happens to be. Those are consumables. Those seem like, you know, tires wear
eventually
out.
You're going to replace the tires. Eventually you're going to replace the brake pads.
And of course,
people, I'm sure, buy a Lamborghini and the first thing they do is buy a new set of tires.
Tires and brake pads because they want to improve the braking performance. And of course that improves your lap time because you can go harder into the turns and you can brake faster and come out of those turns faster. Of course, I understand the importance of brake, you know, like a better brake compound, a better tire compound.
Yeah.
I understand all that. I get it. But if it's available and it's something that everybody could do, yeah, why not? I mean, I guess maybe they're confusing like maybe stock production cars with production cars.
Yeah.
Because a production
car
is one thing.
That's just getting a little too nitpicky about records. Like a production car is a car that you can buy with things on it that you can also buy.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I feel the same way.
Like, I mean, you may get a Lamborghini, maybe not a new one, but a used one, and you want to go out and bust a record at the Nürburgring, but you don't want to have the same beat-up tires that came on the car when you bought it used.
No.
You want to pop some new tires on before you go run the Nürburgring. So,
sure.
But you should still be considered, it should still be considered a stock car.
Exactly. So, in that case, I guess the other argument would be, in order to break that record, you would have to go and buy the exact same tire that they put on at the factory. In order to break that record.
Right. And not to mention, as soon as you run a lap or two or three on a set of tires, you might want some new ones anyway.
What if I have a different air filter in the car? What if I have a different oil in the car?
Yeah.
Does that matter? I mean, what if I'm using a different grease, you know, for the chassis? You know, what if I'm, all that stuff, like it's not
production gasoline. It's kind of the same argument though. Things that are consumable, things that you use up, you should change when needed.
Yeah, this argument is just, it's funny in a way, but it's also maddening in another way. Let's talk about tourist and farting after a break. We're back, and you're listening to the Fast Track, and I'm your host, Scott Benjamin, along with Kurt Guerin. Kurt, everything's still going all right over there?
Yeah.
I keep checking in every segment.
So far, so good?
So far, so good. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we teased a little bit that we're going to talk about something that has a ridiculous name. This is a German name, of course, and I'm sure that they don't think it's ridiculous, of course. All it really means, I think, if I had to guess what this really means, it just means tourist day, right, or tourist driving experience or something like that, But the word is silly.
Yeah. It's tourist and farting.
tourist.
You can't even say it.
I don't know why I can't say it. It's we've laughed about this. It's so juvenile. It's like I'm like a kid, like a little kid when we say tourist and farting. But it is tourist and farting. And all it really means is that there are certain days on the Nürburgring, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are already aware of this, that you can go and drive on the track. And you pay a little bit of a fee, and I don't remember exactly what it is. I want to say it's like $30 or something like that. There's a list somewhere online that I know that you can look up the prices, but the list is a little bit terrifying, and I'll tell you why in just a moment. In 10 seconds, I'll tell you. But you can go and look at the prices of things and find out exactly what it is and when it's happening, because there are certain days when they're having other activities. You know, manufacturers have it reserved, or they have a race, or you know, something like that's going on. But essentially, this becomes like a one-way toll road. Of course, there's no opposing traffic on this little tiny road. But the reason that the list that is terrifying is because when you look up the price, like to drive on the track, they start giving you the prices if you crash, what it costs to replace the guardrail segments, what it costs to have the track team members come out and assist you in your car to get out of the car. They give you prices for medical help. They give you prices for a helicopter to come and fly you off the track if they need to, which has happened many times, I think. They start giving you like some really scary numbers, and they're high numbers. They're expensive. But maybe look past that. Just look at the price of entry and know that you can keep yourself under control on the track, and you'll be fine. But, you know, from what I've seen, Kurt, and you've seen some of the footage as well, like when just anybody can go out there and drive. You know, any car that has, they get their engine checked out. They get, it's not leaking oil or anything. They've got lights. The tires are okay. You know, they check out. I'm sure they have a little bit of a prep, that they have to go through. Mm-hmm. There's no course. Like, you don't have to learn any rules, but there are rules that we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. Once you get out there, you deal with people that are professional, and you deal with some people that are absolute fools. And everything in between.
From what I gather, any old car, any old person can go out there and do whatever they want to do besides go backwards and do donuts in the middle of the track. I mean, as long as you're going forward and abiding by some basic rules of the road, you can go out there and have a good time at the Nürburgring.
Essentially, those are the rules. Now, there are other rules that we should talk about. There's a funny video about what you should not do on the Nürburgring, I'll mention these. I think there's like 7 points that you're not supposed to do, and they all make perfect sense, and they're done in a funny way. But I'll tell you that I've watched many videos of this, and everybody loves to watch the fail videos, I guess. The ones where someone's coming around a corner and they just lose it, and horrible thing happens. They destroy their car. They destroy their daily driver, or maybe it's a tracker. I don't know, but it's probably typically a daily driver.
From the looks of it, yes.
Yeah,
people just go out there in their cars.
Like a fun weekend
on their way home
maybe.
From work. They just dip into the Nürburgring.
Yeah, and then there's a little bit of everything. There's camper vans out there. There's BMWs that, they're cars that have, full decal packages and everything. It looks like a race car, so maybe it is a track day car. A fun toy for the weekend or whatever. But other cars, they do look like just maybe like the family sedan that mm-hmm. someone's taken out for fun. You can rent a car. You can go out there. We'll talk about that too. But, those are the fun ones to watch. But there's also some great videos, and I don't know if you caught these or not, but there's some fantastic videos of people that are driving the track really well. And some privateers, I guess. And I call them privateers. They're not real racers, but people that bring their own vehicle, a BMW or a Mercedes or something, and they're just really skilled, and they can really handle it around that track. And it's really cool to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really good, and they're racing close with other people. And that's the cool thing in that discussion from Boris said earlier that we mentioned. There's a lot of traffic on that track, and it's a lot of different speeds. So you got to be accommodating to that
mm-hmm.
and the weather and all the conditions and everything. But if you get somebody, if you can watch somebody who's doing this really well with another person maybe that's doing really well, and they're chasing each other around the track, it's fun to watch. It's entertaining.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just as good as any race that you'll ever watch.
Yeah.
It really is. It's fun. Near this track, everybody kind of gathers around this one gas station. And around this gas station is a lot like when, if you can imagine this, and I think a lot of people can, when, people are leaving those caffeine and octane type shows on the weekends, and everybody is leaving the parking lot, and they're kind of doing burnouts and showing off a little bit as they exit the parking lot. There's hundreds of people lining the road. They're very, very close to the road. They've all got cameras out. Some of them have chairs. They've got their own personal cars lining the roads. There's fences set up and everything. On these tourist days, people line up like that near this particular gas station, and it's called the ED gas station. And this looks like the word Ed. The Ed gas station, and it's the one that's closest to the track, so all of the cars and motorcycles and trucks and whatever, they tend to fill up there on their way to the track. And that means that they're full of fuel, they're ready to go out on the racetrack, they're excited, they're kind of adrenaline's going, and they've got this crowd that's kind of egging them on to, do a burnout. So you'll find a lot of, interesting videos. You'll see a little bit of everything. It looks like a cruise event or something, where some really amazing cars drive by, and also some very plain cars drive by that are a little bit maybe souped up a little bit, ready for the track, or others that are just plain Jane sedans and are just there for the fun of it.
From what I gather, that's just part of the experience of going to the track.
Yeah,
for tourist and farting.
Yeah,
it's just you go, you get your gas, and you maybe show your car to the crowd a little bit, and then onto the track.
Now, isn't that the funny thing? Is because some people will, they'll get an accident outside of the track because they're trying to show off, but they're like moments away from the one of the greatest tracks in the world.
Yeah.
And they're going to be able to go and just push it outright as far as they
want.
Yeah,
they can go crash on the track instead of in front of the yeah. the gas station.
Very good point. Yeah, very good point. Now, thankfully, it seems like there are fewer accidents there than at the caffeine and octane type shows that that I've seen. It seems more common to see people wrecking leaving those for some reason.
Maybe that's just Darwin at work, yeah, just maybe, weeding out the
maybe.
Before you get to the track. If you can't handle the gas station, then don't even go to the Nürburgring.
No, absolutely. All right. So, you know, that's one thing. That's one part of it. And, you know, that's part of this little town that's right there within the boundaries of the track or near the boundaries of the track. So they ask that you be respectful, and that's one of the things that we're going to talk about. All right. So one of the rules, and again, this is coming from a video that was kind of like a don't do this on the track. And it's very funny in the way that it's done. You can find it online on YouTube. And it's just it's funny in the way that things are phrased, you know, that. So I'm not going to do it very much justice here. You should go and watch this if you get a chance, because it's kind of comical. But it also has some decent footage of what's going on there and tells you some of the rules and explains them a little better than I can. But now, first we should say that, you know, it's open almost every weekend and the last few hours of almost every day for this tourist activity. So, you know, they call it tourist, but it's just open for people to pay and go on this track. Of course, there are track officials there and everything to make sure that things are safe. They've got flags and everything to keep you in line. Cars can be driven. Any car or bike can be driven on the track as long as it's road legal. That's one thing. Here's one of the rules. You can only overtake another car on the left. There's no passing on the right. If you're passed on the right, you're doing it wrong. And that's
should be a rule here in the United States on any road.
It should
just,
be.
Just to you know what? People it, out there who don't know.
It is a rule.
Just pass on the left, not the right.
it's an unwritten, well, maybe even a written.
Probably is written.
Probably is written at this point. So overtake on the left, never on the right. Okay, that makes sense, right? Get this. This is interesting because of what we've been talking about. If you're going there and thinking that you're going to time your lap, that's not what's going to happen. And
they don't
tell
want you
why.
To have the clock in the car.
Yeah. Now this, you can time your lap, but you have to do it in kind of a roundabout way. So you can use your GoPro and you can record your session. You know, you can record however you want it to do, and of course that's going to keep time. So you're able to go back later and deduce your time from the GoPro footage, but you're not able to have a clock right in front of you as you're driving. And many drivers have said, if you're out here for these tourist days and you're watching a clock as you go around the track, you're going to have a bad day no matter what. Because, well, somebody's going to get in front of you in a camper van and ruin your time, right? Because there's so much traffic on the course at any given time, you're going to have to pass. And, you know, you might have to slow down and do that. And that's fine. Just go out there. Even like the guys and girls that do it all the time said, just go out there and have fun. Just go out and have a great time. Drive fast. Get your adrenaline going. You know, just have a good time. And know that you've completed a decent lap. But it doesn't have to come down to the exact second, to the exact, you know, tenths or hundredths of a second that that you think it does. Just go out and have fun. And it's better if you're not watching the clock. And especially, you know, the track officials don't want you watching it, because it's going to lead to aggressive driving. Because if you start to fall behind in your time, you're going to try to push it even harder, and you're going to end up wrecking probably. So it makes sense when you think about it that way. But initially I thought, well, that's crazy. They're not letting you time your own lap.
Well, you can time it. There's also GPS units that you can get that'll just keep time as you go around. So there's no reason to have it there on the dash to look at it.
And I think you can even, you know, in your own head, you can just create a little variance, and you could say like, okay, well, my time was decent. It was 10 minutes and 30 seconds, but I was held up for, you know, a good 20 seconds of that by, the Honda Civic or whatever it was that was in front of me. Don't leave the scene of a crash. So if you crash and, you know, you bang up a guardrail, even if it's just you alone, you're not supposed to leave that scene of a crash.
Yeah.
You can stay there and wait for somebody to come over and check you out and make sure that everything's all right and get things back on track again, I guess, so to speak, because there's probably some cleanup that has to happen, and they want to make sure that, you know, the wheel's not going to fall off
and
in the next turn.
Or fluid leaks from the car. They don't want you dragging.
That's a huge one.
Fluids across the track.
That is a big one, because I've seen many videos where someone has leaked fuel on the previous, you know, the previous car has leaked fuel or oil, and four cars will wreck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ruins their day, ruins their year, month, whatever. I don't know. It's expensive.
Yeah.
It's very expensive. So, yeah, that's a huge issue. There's no standing on the track. And you and I have both seen examples of this in those videos.
Mm-hmm.
One of these videos, a guy nearly loses his legs when another car comes by. He barely makes it over that wall.
Yeah. He dives over the fence.
Yeah.
And fall, I think you can kind of see him rolling down the other side because there was a hill on the other side
of
the fence.
Yeah, he tumbled for quite some time. Yeah. I mean, he
and then
tumbled
you see him,
out
like,
of view.
Run up and...
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like flicking off the people with the camera. They're yelling something back and forth.
Yeah, they're probably yelling.
Like, idiot.
Yeah, stupid. You know, get up, you know, what are you doing? Because he was between the guardrail, which is, I mean, it looked like it was chest high. And,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
I don't think it was like a BMW that was coming at him really fast. And it did clip the wall right where he was.
There,
and,
yeah,
he hopped over like in just a half a second before it hit him.
It's crazy, too, because he was on the inside of a turn and there's places where you wouldn't think that a car would be crashing into, but that's why there's the rule. Don't stand on the side of the
track. And I think that situation was an oil situation where there was oil or something slick on the track.
It looked like it.
Because there were many cars that were wrecking in the same turn for no good reason. I mean, they're just spinning out for no good reason. Okay, the next one, this one, a little, again, counterintuitive. No drifting. You're not allowed to intentionally drift on the Nürburgring, and a track marshal will report you if they see you doing this drifting. Now, I watched videos where you can see that people are taking turns intentionally drifting through them. You know, if you slide a little bit, that's one thing. If you are drifting through the turn, that's a big difference. And there are people that I've seen intentionally drift, and yeah, they do get reported. And I don't know if there's a fine involved or if you just are kind of banned for maybe that day or that week or whatever from the
or
track.
Or for life.
Yeah. That's the last one. This is silly. No driving like a maniac. That's the last rule. I mean, that was the funniest last rule. Like, I thought, okay, there's going to be something big here. There's going to be something really, monumental here at the end. No driving like a maniac because it's on a public road. And, I guess it does make sense when you understand this. When you get off the track, you are in this little town. If you're going to the gas station or wherever, I think this is where that they're talking about is like, you know, you got all that energy from the track and you still are kind of at the track, you know, because you're in that area. Don't keep driving like you're on the track when you're in the town. I mean, the townspeople don't want to deal with that. They would have to deal with that every day, all day, if that was the case. And I can imagine that would be infuriating. So the don't drive like a maniac thing makes more sense when you understand that, yeah, there's this community there. And you're really disrupting the community if you drive like that through there. You should just leave the track situation on the track and then realize that you're on a public road after that point.
Yeah. Well, what I find about all of these rules is they are generally just rules of the road.
Common sense. All right. So I have one quick question for you before we wrap up. And I think we already talked about this, but would you go and drive this track knowing what you know about it and seeing what you've seen in your own personal car? Now, of course, rental cars, if you rent a car from anywhere other than a place called Big Garage, which is right in that area, you can rent a sports car and go there.
Mm-hmm.
Very expensive, but you
mm-hmm.
can do it. If you rent a car like an Avis or Hertz or whoever, you will be banned forever from renting a car from them if you take it on the Nürburgring track. So, and we do have a listener from Car Stuff that happened to. He showed me the letter. And he showed it
was
to it, me with pride.
It was probably worth it. Yeah,
it was a badge of courage. Letter. You know, yeah, he did. He was happy. He knew the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But would you take your own personal vehicle on the Nürburgring and drive it, knowing what you know now?
It would be fun to go out there and just. Tool around a little bit.
Would you be a little bit afraid of some Yahoo that's going to, you know, try to, like, they're trying to break a lap record or something, you know, that they're going to cause you to wreck? Because I know you can control yourself, of course.
Yeah.
But what about the part of it that you don't have control over?
A little bit.
A little
but
bit?
I mean, I feel as if you should have that fear in general.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier just not to think about the other people.
Yeah.
And
then
from what I can tell, there's a healthy mix of people just out there having fun, and then there's some people that are taking it a little too serious.
Healthy mix is a good way.
Yeah, and this is not an event to go out there and try to break a track record, because first of all, you're not going to. There's no way you're going to get even close to the 6 minutes and 45 second time of the Lamborghini.
Of course not.
Probably not even going to get under 10 minutes.
No, probably not.
So if anyone's planning to go out there, just take it easy and have fun with the experience.
Good advice. Now, one little caveat that I want to mention here, because I think it's worth mentioning, is that, you know, when you're on the track, I would assume that insurance doesn't play a factor in this whole. Like, I think that insurance is probably off. They're not going to cover anything that happens on that track, I think. Mm-hmm. So that might be the only difference between, you know, like the risk that you assume when you're on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's still a physical danger and there's still, you know, property damage danger and all that. Mm-hmm. I get it. But I do think that you're financially risking a little bit more when you go on this track. And it's worthwhile to look into that before you go and before you do this because, you know, again, I don't have all the details here about this, obviously. I'm just kind of, you know, giving you an overview and I want listeners to go out and really investigate all this and find out what's happening there. Because I think there's some fun to be had there, of course. There's a lot of fun to be had there.
Yeah. So, Scott, would you do this?
Oh, would I do?
Oh, this is what everyone wants
you
to
know. I think that, you know, I would probably rent a car. I know it's expensive, but if I were going to do it, I don't think I'd risk my own car out there. I think that I would rent a car from this place that I mentioned, this Big Garage. If you want to go to a website and check out the prices, it's biggarage.de, and you can check out what they've got there. They've got all kinds of sports cars, and they're expensive. They're not cheap. You know, and you pay for like 2 laps or 12 laps or, you know, whatever.
Oh, okay.
It's like different rates. But I would assume that insurance comes along with that. You're probably still paying quite a bit if you wreck it, but I bet there's a limit to it. But anyways, it's a worthwhile thing to check into. So look up the Nürburgring and these tourist days and you know, what you can do, what you can't do. But it seems like it's kind of a fun destination, maybe a bucket list.
You just did your bucket list episode.
Yeah, exactly.
This is one of those things that all you car enthusiasts should put on your bucket list.
Sure.
It seems like a really great experience.
Why not? I'd love to get over there to do it. And, you know, in the meantime, if you want, you can contact us and tell us if you have done this or if you want to go over and do this on social media. You can reach us on Facebook and Instagram, where we are The Fast Track Show, or on Twitter, where we are The Fast Track Pod. And if you want to check out our show's website, where it's a brand new website, really. There's not many podcasts there yet, but there will be. You can go to thefasttrackshow.com and check us out there. And, of course, you can leave reviews on Apple Podcasts or on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you happen to listen to your podcast. And if you like what you're hearing, if you like listening to Kurt and I talk about all this stuff and think you have a friend that might be interested in this kind of thing, let them know as well. Tell your friends, and I know we're happy to have you as a listener, and we're always trying to gain new ones. So we appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks.
The Fast Track is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.